up here?
Final thoughts are, it's really interesting to see the difference between tribally managed and non-tribally managed forests, and I encourage you to check out this report or the summary to kind of get a better idea of how folks place their focus when their priorities are different.
Well, Melanie, thank you so much for taking the time to walk us through this.
Althea, thank you for taking the time to ask.
That was Melanie Henshaw, the Indigenous Affairs reporter at Street Roots, talking with me about her new article. It's called Tribal Forests Underfunded. Tribally managed forests lack funding to address myriad issues, new report finds. More information available at streetroots.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's annual fall membership drive is just getting started, and now's a great time to become a member of KBOO. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 right now. Your donation will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000, thanks to the generous support of a group of anonymous donors. Join the KBOO family today and help us meet our $55,000 fall drive goal. All the cool kids are doing it.
This is Heather Chavez. You're listening to KBOO, listener-sponsored radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout-out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And KBOO is in the middle of our annual fall membership drive. KBOO is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. And your contribution will now be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of KBOO donors. So please help us reach our $55,000 goal by becoming a member today. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support.
Mm-hmm. And before we get into our topic today, we wanted to give you a quick update on the historic WGA and SAG after strike in Hollywood. Last month, the Writers Guild officially ended their strike after their board approved a contract agreement with the studios. Shortly after, the contract was ratified by the membership, and we'd like to congratulate the WGA on their massive victory. While we won't be covering that here today, many of our sister programs have covered it in great detail, and we recommend you check them out at laborradio.org. It's important to note, however, that SAG-AFTRA is still on strike and needs your support. If you'd like to help, visit sagaftra.org, where you can participate in strike actions or contribute to the strike fund, which goes to actors and other professionals currently unemployed due to the strike.
Absolutely. Very well said. So we're going to follow up on a topic that we actually discussed last month, but, you know, in a critical escalation of their stand-up strike strategy, the United Auto Workers, or the UAW, launched a surprise strike at Ford's most profitable plant last Wednesday. They called on the 8,700 members in Kentucky to walk off the job after the company did not come to the bargaining table with a new contract proposal. And according to the UAW, Ford has been saying for weeks that it had more to add to its economic offer, but at the bargaining table, the company presented the union with the same economic package that it had brought before.
Mm-hmm. And Ford has offered UAW members a 23% wage increase over the course of a four-year contract, as well as cost of living adjustments. However, the UAW has demanded a 36% wage hike and significant improvements to retirement, healthcare, and other benefits.
Yeah. So, you know, in a message posted on the union's social media feed last week, UAW President Sean Fain wrote, quote, "We're not going to wait around forever. If Ford can't get that after 4 weeks on strike, these 8,700 workers shutting down their biggest plant will help them understand it," end quote. And so, you know, basically every Friday for the past 4 weeks, the CEOs of the big three automakers have waited fearfully for Fain to announce which plants will strike next. But without warning, on Wednesday afternoon, the union threw a haymaker, announcing that within 10 minutes, the UAW would be shutting down the vast Kentucky truck plant. Speaking outside of Ford's Dearborn, Michigan headquarters, Fain said, quote, "We came here today to get another offer from Ford. Unfortunately, this offer was the exact same offer they gave to us 2 weeks ago. They're not taking us seriously. We've been very patient working with the company on this. And at the end of the day, they have not met expectations. They're not even coming to the table on it. So at this point, we have to take action," end quote.
According to a report from the Detroit Free Press, thousands of workers left their jobs at 6:30 p.m., just minutes after union officials walked through the plant, shut off the line, and told workers to walk out peacefully.
Yeah, and this plant, set on 500 acres outside of Louisville, Kentucky, is one of Ford's most profitable, cranking out full-size SUVs and their Super Duty line of commercial trucks.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, the plant is responsible for almost half of Ford's U.S. revenue.
That's crazy. Yeah, so Ford, you know, which, you know, Ford has seen profits surge this year, but the company itself has expressed outrage over the strike expansion, noting that the Kentucky truck plant is one of the biggest auto factories in the world. And in a statement, the company explained, quote, "The vehicles produced at the factory, the F-Series, Super Duty, the Ford Expedition, and the Lincoln Navigator, generate $25 billion a year in revenue," end quote. And in response, the UAW released their own statement saying, quote, "Ford just admitted they're losing $48,000 a minute in revenue while the Kentucky truck plant is on strike. This is how much value auto workers at this plant produce. And now they're now they're showing Ford has how expensive it is to not come to the table and pony up."
Yeah, and I think too, the you know, the Biden administration sees the value in a healthy car industry as well. Biden obviously joining the picket lines with the workers this week and kind of urging them all to stick with it. So clearly people are showing up and showing out. And I think Biden even sees here the growth in the industry, the record profits in the industry are not being shared equally. And so obviously this is a huge thing for not only Americans, but the American economy.
Yeah, absolutely.
The said Kentucky plant began operations in 1969 and quickly became a cornerstone of Ford's strategy to lock in lucrative government and commercial clients. A long line of dump trucks and cement mixers were labeled the L series for Louisville.
Nice. Yeah. And inside that aging facility, safety concerns have mounted as summers get hotter. As one worker in the plant explained, you know, he's been there for decades. He was said in an interview with Labor Notes, quote, "People are dropping here because it's so hot." Management's answer was, "We'll give you two Gatorades." I've seen a woman pass out and then the supervisor literally stepped over her to restart the line, end quote. And last year, Ford committed $700 million to expand the plant in the next 4 years, including potentially adding electric variants into its SUVs.
Mm-hmm. But workers have stated that the plant still lacks any air conditioning or even a cafeteria, while Ford's nearby Louisville assembly plant has had both for quite a while.
Yeah, so it seems as they're going to invest money in the plant, they might as well invest in making it a comfortable work environment for the workers there as mm-hmm. well. During the first few weeks of the UAW's stand-up strike, the Kentucky truck plant members heeded the union's call to organize to refuse voluntary overtime. Now, many members struggled to give up that extra pay as exploding local housing costs had already made some of them homeless and forced others to live an hour and a half away. But despite their struggles, members stayed ready to strike. And as one worker on the picket line explained, quote, we just want to tip it over for real. We want it to be like the Boston Tea Party. We feel like this can be the final move on the chessboard to make the CEO fold," end quote.
Mm-hmm. The 8,700 strikers in Kentucky joined the 25,000 already walking the lines at assembly plants and parts distribution centers across the country in the union's escalating stand-up strike.
Yeah, and last week, the UAW announced that General Motors agreed to include electric battery plant workers in its labor agreement, which Fain described as a transformative win. A just transition to electric vehicle manufacturing was perhaps the most ambitious of the UAW's contract demands when the strike began.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to clarify that, just essentially those factories were included in the previous contract negotiations. So they were basically unorganized workers that were a part of, obviously, the larger portfolio.
Yeah.
The big three have previously said that their battery plants are set up through joint ventures with other companies and shouldn't be factored in negotiations. But obviously, that is starting to change.
Yeah, like they've definitely gotten concessions on that. Like, you know, since the EV factories fall outside of the UAW's collective bargaining agreement, they are just non-affiliated workers working in these factories. And so that means that, like, the wages and working conditions are far worse at these plants than they are at the ones that are making gas-powered cars. So as part of the fight to eliminate all tiers, the UAW has sought to extend the same union standards to the new EV plants as well, the workers in those plants. So just minutes before Fain was planning to announce that workers at GM's assembly plant in Arlington, Texas, were being called on to join the strike, the automaker told UAW negotiators that it actually relented and agreed to cover workers in its electric vehicle factories under the union's national contract. So it seems that the threat of expanding the walkout to Arlington, where some of GM's top-selling cars are manufactured by roughly 5,300 workers, was too great a threat for the auto giant to withstand, and they capitulated to the demand. The demand that itself was an actual stretch when the strike first began.
Mm-hmm.
And so, speaking of the major victory, UAW President Sean Fain said, quote, "We've been told for months that this is impossible, and now we've called their bluff. Today, because of our power, GM has agreed to lay the foundation for a just transition," end quote. And after agreeing to the union's demand, GM announced that the work stoppage has cost the company $200 million so far.
Mm-hmm. And on the other side, the UAW has been able to preserve its $825 million strike fund and to continue paying strike members $500 per week.
Yeah, so that's a major victory for, you know, on top of a major victory, that is another major victory for the UAW strikers. The impact of this victory has reverberated around the labor movement and the progressive left. Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, applauded the UAW's securing of major movement from GM, saying, quote, "The pressure of smart, creative tactics backed up by unbreakable solidarity is working," end quote. And Senator Bernie Sanders congratulated Fain and the union and called on Stellantis and Ford, the other two of the major big three companies, to provide their own guarantees that workers making EV batteries at their plants could be covered by the UAW agreement, adding, quote, "When workers stand together in the fight for economic justice, there is nothing they cannot accomplish," end quote. And Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said that Fain and the UAW are showing, quote, "How union power can lead the economy in tackling the climate crisis and making the world, making a better world for workers," end quote. So just quickly before we continue on with our discussion here, just want to let folks know that you're tuned into Labor Radio here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. And we'll be right back to talk about our discussion of the ongoing auto workers strike and sort of the political fallout from that in just a moment. But I want to drop a quick reminder here to please donate to KBOO right now during our fall membership drive. Your contributions will be matched dollar for dollar up to $14,000 thanks to the generous support of a group of KBOO donors. Please help us reach our $55,000 fundraising goal by donating today at kboo.fm/give. Or if you're using the KBOO mobile app, just click on the donate button. Thank you so much for supporting Community Power Radio. We here at Labor Radio really appreciate all of your support. And so now we'll get back into the discussion of the political fallout from the UAW strike. You know, so on the flip side of things, you know, we just heard from what progressive Democrats, the support, you know, that they have showed for the major victory that the UAW has secured. You know, however, on the other side of the aisle, rather than actually supporting auto workers in their strike against billionaire CEOs at the Big Three, Republican officials are instead using the historic labor action to rail against collective bargaining and to stoke partisan conflict with China. At a recent campaign rally, presidential hopeful Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina said that companies should absolutely fire workers who go on strike. And, you know, he pointed to, you know, what he described as a great example of former President Ronald Reagan firing more than 11,000 striking air traffic controllers in 1981, which is universally understood by, you know, anyone who is a student of the labor movement in this country to be kind of the nail in the coffin for the mid-20th century explosion in labor organizing in this country. I mean, by firing the air traffic controllers, Reagan and his cohort essentially signaled that the dominant powers, and specifically the Republican Party, has no interest in helping workers and is in fact entirely on the side of management. So that was a major turning point. And so by Tim Scott pointing to that right now as, you know, something that he thinks is a good, you know, a good example for what a leader should do in this moment where we're seeing so many, you know, workers go out on strike, it's just unthinkable that he would be someone who is seriously considering we're seriously considering electing president.
And the major talking points echoed by many of the others in the GOP is basically that Biden's federal policies are driving up electrical vehicle production, which requires the import of components like batteries and things like this from China, a process that they claim is not only enriching an official U.S. rival, but also threatening American jobs. Yeah. I think, you know, obviously one could claim that the market is kind of doing that on its own. And also, you know, Biden is addressing things like this, while not directly, things like the infrastructure bill and other things like that are really heavily incentivizing manufacturing of this kind to come back to the U.S., which again creates more jobs and helps stimulate the economy. So overall, kind of not strong talking points and rhetoric coming in the response.
Yeah, it is shocking how much like the rhetoric in, as you're saying, in response to what the union is getting is just completely divorced from the political reality. Exactly. Yeah. It's as if the people spouting the rhetoric assume that the people listening to it are just completely detached from what is actually happening and are just completely unaware. But of course, that's not always the case. You know, this rhetoric is a perfect, it's also a perfect cover for the GOP's staunch anti-union ideology. You know, like by playing up this sort of, you know, the fear of jobs being shipped overseas without addressing what the actual workers want, it allows the conservatives and, you know, the Republicans to appear as if they're standing with striking workers without supporting any of the workers' actual demands. You know, demands like a 36% pay increase, an end to contract tiers, stopping the abuse of temporary workers, or cost of living adjustments, and, you know, more paid time off. All things that are not at all being addressed by the Republicans who are, you know, ostensibly talking about the UAW strike. So, you know, instead of focusing their ire at the big three CEOs, who together have made $74 million just last year, GOP officials are pivoting to a narrative of great power competition with China, which directly benefits their own political goals rather than the economic goals of the striking auto workers.
Yeah, and perhaps the biggest purveyor of the claim that China is the enemy of striking auto workers is former president and also, again, 2024 hopeful Donald Trump, who spoke on September 27th at a non-union auto manufacturer, Drake Enterprises, in Macomb County, Michigan.
Yeah, you know, the twice impeached and four times indicted former reality show host had these inspiring words to share with the crowd of, you know, what it was ostensibly auto workers. He said, quote, "A vote for Crooked Joe means the future of the auto industry will be made in China. It doesn't make a bit of difference what you get, because in 2 years, you're all going to be out of business. You're not getting anything," end quote, which is just inspiring words from someone vying to be the leader of, you know, who ostensibly claims to be pro-worker. It's pretty insane.
Mm-hmm. Trump repeatedly and falsely accused the Biden administration of attempting to impose electric vehicle mandates that will spell the death of American auto industry, according to him.
Yeah. But, you know, all the rhetoric really just further highlights how far out of step conservatives, and specifically, you know, those running for the GOP nomination for president right now, are with the actual interests of the working class. You know, you can say all these things that, you know, you think are hot button issue. You know, you can try and tie it into what your own ideology is, but at the end of the day, the workers know what's best for them, and they know what they want, and they know when a politician is not standing up for that or not addressing their issues. You know, as we discussed earlier, the UAW has made very clear that, unlike Trump and the Republicans, it doesn't oppose the transition to electric vehicles and is instead fighting to ensure that those EVs are built by unionized workers under a fair contract. And the UAW president, Sean Fain, has also not been shy about his feelings towards the former president. In a recent interview with CNN, Fain said of Trump, quote, "I don't think the man has a bit of care about what our workers stand for, what the working class stands for. He serves the billionaire class, and that's what's wrong with this country," end quote. You know, and it's interesting to note that, like, you know, in fact, it's not even clear how many actual union members or even how many actual auto workers were in the audience at Trump's speech in Michigan that was touted by, you know, all media, but specifically like right-wing media like Fox News, as him going to address the striking auto workers and to, you know, be the first politician to go on the ground and actually, you know, stand with them. But yeah, it's not clear how many people in that audience were even auto workers, and none of them, you know, likely were with the union. You know, although some of the crowd were waving, you know, signs that said, you know, quote, "auto workers for Trump" and "union members for Trump" signs, one individual who held a union members for Trump sign admitted to a reporter for the Detroit News that she's not a union member. And another person with a sign that read "auto workers for Trump" said he actually wasn't an auto worker at all. And of course, the whole rally itself was held at a non-unionized parts manufacturing plant. So it really just kind of belies the lie underneath what the sort of veneer of being pro-worker that you get from someone like Trump and, you know, the Republicans at large, really. So ahead of Trump's Michigan visit, the AFL-CIO released a statement explaining that Trump's presidency was catastrophic for workers. They backed that up by pointing to his, you know, his anti-union appointments to the National Labor Relations Board, to his defense of so-called right-to-work laws, to the repeal of Labor Department rules aimed at protecting worker pay while he was in office, and of course to his failure to protect manufacturing jobs. And, you know, it seems that a majority of Americans side with the union on this matter. According to a poll conducted by Blue Rose Research in September, 58% of likely voters said they support the strike, as opposed to just 17% who said they oppose it. Now, the polling found that even a plurality of Trump voters and Americans who self-identify as very conservative support the strike by a nearly two to one margin. And, you know, roughly 70% of Biden voters and voters who identify as liberal also support the UAW's decision to strike. So it really does seem clear that no matter what political rhetoric gets thrown at us, the American people know that when unions are strong, we are all better off.
Yeah, and you know, I don't like to always compare a situation like this, like a manufacturing situation like this, to sports.
Yeah.
But it's proven helpful in the past because it's an industry that I think many more Americans understand a little bit more fundamentally.
Absolutely.
And I think another, you know, alongside the polling that you saw, I think we're seeing this anecdotally and also kind of just communications-wise, like via the internet and other mediums like this, that, you know, people are supporting more players, right? Like, they're supporting the NBA Players Association as opposed to the owners, right? And the board of governors. Absolutely. And so we're kind of seeing that play out across multiple industries. And like you said, the polling data shows it. There are more strikes going on now than ever. And it's very clear from the polling data that Americans are excited about it. Yeah. After what's been kind of a pretty long downturn in terms of the number of strikes, the number of people in unions and things like this. So it's really, you know, COVID has not created, but spurred on a pretty sizable opportunity for workers in this country.
I think you're absolutely right. Like, the sports is probably the premier area in which Americans understand unions, mm-hmm. like see unions and understand the value of them. And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Like, what the players in the leagues, you know, in the major leagues that happened in this country during COVID, what they were able to get in terms of COVID safety precautions and things like that,
yeah.
built in by the league, showed the power of those unions, and people started to recognize that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, kind of what we were talking about at the top of the show, what you were mentioning, another prime example of Americans recognizing the value of unions in an area that they normally pay attention to yeah. is like Hollywood, and specifically the writers, and even probably more specifically yeah. the actors' strike.
Yeah, and just like the right, just like the Writers Guild, not every player is LeBron, right?
Right.
A lot of players, you have 3 or 4 years to get in and make your money, and hopefully get life insurance and things like this for the rest of your life, and whatever pension you can earn. And right, and you know, while it's not always easy to sympathize with people who can make millions of dollars a year, not everybody's equal in these things, just like not every writer's equal. We weren't striking for Shonda Rhimes.
Right.
We were striking for the rank and file, right? The people who are in writers' rooms that were slowly getting cut out, right?
Yeah.
It's for the people in these different, you know, Kentucky warehouses, right?
Yeah.
That are kind of seeing their overtime hours cut, or less PTO, or right, record profits that they aren't getting a share of, right?
When especially they don't get air conditioning.
As no inflation and, no air conditioning while inflation increases and their wages stagnate.
Yeah.
Again, I think this is a really big moment for union workers and unions in general. Obviously, Labor Radio, we are stand in solidarity with
yeah.
the UAW.
And yeah, it's like, I mean, just exactly like you're saying, it's important to recognize that whether you're talking about a factory worker in the Kentucky, you know, one of the Kentucky manufacturing plants, or you're talking about a defensive lineman in the NFL, you know, or whatever it is, like someone who isn't Tom Brady or whatever, like they are all still workers,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the, you know, they are, even if you're talking about actors or writers or athletes, sure, they are millionaires, but they are workers in compared to the billionaires who own, whether it's the studios or the sports franchises or whatever it is. So regardless of the amount of money we're talking about, we're still talking about a clash between workers and, you know, people who produce the value, and owners, the people who reap the profits of that.
Yeah.
That work.
Yeah, and I think while it can, you know, a narrative can be crafted that some of these asks are selfish, a healthy industry in which, you know, a healthy industry that's viewed as a middle or upper class industry is going to cause more educated and skilled workers to come into it,
yeah.
which is ultimately going to help the industry kind of writ large, right? We mentioned it on the last show, but it, you know, if being a writer in Hollywood isn't viewed as something that's mobile or can help you kind of, you know, increase your status class-wise and kind of economic-wise, then less people are going to do it, and
yeah.
less incentives are there to do it. And that's kind of how the market works. So really, a lot of times, these striking workers end up helping the industries that they're striking against.
Absolutely.
And again, I think that sometimes isn't calculated into it, and it can be viewed as just selfish. But again, the polling data and things like this are starting to show that that's turning.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, regardless of what the rhetoric is or the sort of ingrained understandings of this, Americans are realizing, and have really been starting to realize for a few years now, the importance of unions and the importance of like labor power and the difference between
yeah.
workers and management. And it's great to see that that's bared out in both the support for the UAW, but also the writers and everyone else, and in the polling data as well. So unfortunately, we're gonna have to leave it there. We are out of time, but we will absolutely keep an eye on the situation that is taking place in Detroit and all of the auto worker strikes. And we will bring that information back to you when we are back next month.
Hey yo, this is Clipping. You're listening to KBOO.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. Just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening, you're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Today we're going to be talking with Dr. Avon Hart Johnson, the president and co-founder of